You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Cool, man. I'm glad to be doing, dude. I gotta tell you, podcast touring is a lot more exhausting.
Oh yeah, it's the new. I don't know what would. I mean, there's got to be a. I mean, are you gonna do like Kelly Ripa and Ryan Seacrest?
Well, no, it's the new. The thing that I want to do when I do like this shit is do it with guys that like, dude. And by the way, I really appreciate what you did. Like you're the type of dude that like when you meet you. Or maybe I'll save this for the. We are. Okay, yeah. Good. Like, you're the...
Come on, man. Compliment me up, dude.
Yeah, don't go. Trust me. The compliment's going to be on.
Yeah.
No, but you're the type of dude that when we met in...
Montreal.
Just for Laughs.
Yeah.
And we're at the Montreal Festival. We were even in, like, the same bus going to one of those shows.
Yeah.
Might have been the Kevin Hart one. And we were just there. And you were the type of dude that, like, when you had a rapport... Like, when you have a rapport with somebody, you're cool with them.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, like, oh, you're funny, blah, blah, you're funny. Yeah, we'll be in touch. Like, you reached out to me during pandemic and go, hey, man, like, I was in Seattle. One of your bits came on.
Oh, so funny.
Love the podcast. Just great. And then I'm like, so I want to do podcasts with guys like that. Like,
totally.
Ryan Sickler.
Another homie.
Like, another... Yeah, like, there's certain people where it's like, I'm not going to go and run around and just do, oh, a friend of a friend said I should do that one, and
right.
I don't know the person.
Yeah.
It's like, I like to meet you because, and it's going to be a better podcast.
Totally.
You know, the reason why me and Bobby Kelly click on podcasts, the reason why me and Burp click, is because it's like we're throwing alley-oops to each other. We know
totally.
Each other. So when you have like a homie like that,
yeah.
like it's just going to be, it's going to work.
And guys need minimal info to like really develop rapport. It's like right out of the gate, I liked your stand-up. Like I knew we had mutual buds.
Yeah.
And then like, I don't know, within 5 seconds of saying what up to someone,
you know.
It's like, I don't know, did they give you eye contact? Did they not fucking try to like slap the top of your dick as like a bit? And you're like, oh, I guess that's what you think is funny. Like next time I'll be hard, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
We just like, and sports and comedy.
Yeah.
And then like, just be like, I don't know, approachable. It's kind of a short checklist.
Because in this business, we're so used to insecurity.
Yeah.
And insecurity either making somebody act like an asshole or
right.
just kind of be like in a shell. And when you know somebody that just lets that go and they're just cool, it's like, oh, this is.
Oh, yeah.
This is it.
Also, I know you had just gotten your restraining orders lifted. On Dan Cook, so I knew that was like out in the like that we could bond over that. When I met you, your kids were how old?
My kids, when I met you, so they're 3 years apart. So when I met you, I believe my kids were either 10 and 7 or 9 and 6.
Okay, I just remember. Because, you know, I'm an uncle, but I'm not one of those guys that's like, I get it, dude. Like, the dad stuff, I pretty much get it just without.
Right.
But I remember you had a really sharp, like, fun dad, but like, because I've heard a lot of comics kind of break down the father business. And like, you had such poignant shit. I wish I could remember the exact bits.
Yeah.
And that made me actually go, oh, maybe like I want to do this sooner than later. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you had like a fun take on it, but we're able to really break down like how difficult it can be, but not to deter somebody away from being like, having kids is a fucking, dude, good luck. You, dude, you'll sleep when you die, man. Like these guys fucking suck. I should call them fucking dream killer and fucking, you know, should have swallowed, you know, but you had a really, a really fun take on it.
Yeah, and always makes me feel good when like Burr and Giannis and some of my dearest friends go, dude, I did this because of you, and I'm going, really,
dude, I was
sitting down and both of them like looked me in the face. Those are two of my dearest friends in the business and in life now, and goes, dude, I did this cause, like, and then seeing them with their kids and knowing that like, cause me not having a family was never part of this. Like I was I was probably delusional thinking, oh, I'm gonna start making it a comedy with a family. I could do all that.
Bring on
the fucking responsibility. Yeah, yeah. But it is a little more, listen, there is a balance and there's a give or take.
Right.
You know, I'm gonna get my sets in, but I'm not gonna be out there drinking at the bar at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Sobers you up.
Yeah, and there were nights where I was a comic where I was out and I'm looking and I'm kind of hammered and it's 2 and I go, I gotta get a baby on a bus in 5 hours.
Wow.
So like those nights and you're like, well, I can't. So having
but you gotta have those nights too though, still, right?
Yes.
Every now and then, just to like.
Yeah, you can't
keep
be,
1 foot in the game, but also like not expect to be, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you have to have those nights, but then like there are some of those times where your wife looks at you and goes, all right, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, what are you doing, dude? You came in with a Slurpee and a half-eaten burrito.
Four. You were throwing up at 6. The kids need to be on the bus. They're scared.
Yeah.
No, but
they're scared, yeah.
Yeah, but like I think that doing this job and having a family, it makes like your comics going like, oh, so like did it hurt your career? Dude, it made it better. I remember one time we were outside Stand Up New York.
Yeah.
And JB Smooth was on the stoop, and he had been in the business probably about 18 years, and he was writing. He didn't get the curb. This is before the curb. He got curb. He was writing for SNL. He was a writer.
Wow.
He auditioned.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He auditioned the year that Keenan auditioned.
Gotcha.
And he got on as a writer. And I remember he was sitting outside, and he goes, "Man, he goes, when my daughter was born, he goes, that's when it's like that. You're in that horse race, and that's when the blinders go on, and it doesn't matter. That's what my wife says when my son Lucas was born. She saw a difference in me. I don't think so because I was always hungry.
Yeah.
But I think it was just like I think I was getting better at the time he was born. But she says she saw something in me that was almost like you know like the last minute of a basketball game when they're about to inbound it defense is going a little harder to stop it. You know what I mean? You know
that's
the defense
amazing.
Is like then they got to call a timeout even before they inbound.
Right.
You know. It could have been that shit, but it's just like it's like when you love what you do and you want a family, you're gonna make it work.
Yeah,
it's all about like the person. Now a lazy piece of shit who wants to drink and do drugs,
right? Is gonna keep doing that,
and for them, they're like, oh, kids, fuck that. Oh, it's gonna hurt my career. It's like, no, you're using that as an excuse.
Right.
You think it's gonna hurt? You want to do that stupid shit because a lot of us are children.
Is that dude? 1,000%. Was having a family. You come from a what type of family? Like big?
I come from a broken home.
Gotcha.
I come from a broken home. My parents had like textbook what not to do when you get divorced. My father, 100% Sicilian. We don't do that. Well, fuck, you know, she went crazy. We don't do it. My mother, Greek. So my mother's 100% Greek. My father's 100% Sicilian.
Whoa.
Early 80s, you know, my dad was making money. We were doing good. We lived in like in a Tudor near Scarsdale. Like if they didn't, you know, get divorced, I would not be in his business. I would be probably went to a great college.
Totally.
I probably would have had some sort of job, whether, you know, doing something. And
I fully agree. Mine got divorced at 9 years. How old were you?
My brother Christian was 10, so he took more of the bullets.
Yeah.
But I was 5, and it was just a broken home, separated, seeing him like a little on Sunday and a little on Wednesday, then dropping us off. But it was brutal with them.
You kind of don't know any different at that age, like even 5 and 9 respectively. Like you're still kind of a little oblivious to like, oh, I still get to see him though, right? But then like it starts to creep in, like the gaps of like, oh, once a week or sometimes once every 2 weeks. And then seeing them and then seeing other people's parents and go and having that be the example of like, why isn't mine like that? Why aren't they like cheersing spoons and having Cheerios and like, you know, kind of playing with each other under the table, you know, something to kind of show that the family's together.
The family's, and I didn't have that. So what that did was that stripped a lot of my security. So I was always worried about my mom, something would happen. Even though my stepfather came in the picture, I just like not having your dad there. And I'm starting to see it now, like when Lucas and Sophia see me and Stacy fight, You could even see, like, and we don't go crazy in front of them.
Yeah.
But, like, if they just see that there's any sort of tension, you can see. But then when we hug, you can see them light up.
Whoa.
Dude, I fucking hugged my wife in the kitchen after, like, we were, it wasn't bad. We were just having, like, a hectic week. She's working from home. I'm going to get the kids. If I got to, I'm running down. I built a podcast studio in a room off my garage during pandemic.
Killer.
So I'm going down there doing stuff. And it's just tension, and it's
hard. By the way, it's the first pandemic. Everything is elevated. So, like, there's a lot of, like, hopefully, you know, the kids will look back and be like, fucking, we give you guys a little bit more slack because COVID, we didn't truly understand what that was and who was in charge. But.
Yeah. And you know, for the first little bit, we're playing cards at night. Everything is good. But when they feel the tension, I saw my daughter watch me. I went up to Stacy, like, she was at the, like, sink, and I went up to her from behind, and I kind of just put my arms around her, and I kissed her on the cheek. I hugged her, and I saw my daughter light. I saw my daughter feel the security of the family, of the stableness.
Whoa.
I saw it, too. Now this little girl is like, I'm going to enjoy this nugget a little more.
Yeah.
This shit's good. Like, you know, the structure is strong. And vice versa. When they feel tension, I could see my daughter kind of just like my, you know, but me and my wife are really good. Like, if we have a fight, we'll talk later.
How has just having a family changed your comedy? Like, I have so many questions. Let me actually start. So New Jersey.
New York. Yep.
Do people still get like, is there still like a strong, rival between that? Like, me just mistaking it, were you like, dude, there's a big difference. Fuck you for assuming that I grew up anywhere near Trenton.
The funniest, I hate it because of the traffic and the bridge and all that shit. But what's crazy is like 6 miles, Adam, and it's different crowds. It's different people. Hmm. Jersey and New York are like right here. And I remember the late, great Mike DiStefano, rest his soul. He would be like, you go over the bridge and it's just different. You'd be in Jersey at the Stress Factory. Not that they're complete fucking animals, but it's just different. It's just a different, you know, thing than New York. So no, I mean, I don't know about like a rivalry, but like me and my friends are always like, fuck Jersey, you know?
Give me like the breakdown of a Jersey guy and like a New York guy. Like, what's the true?
Oh man, that's a New York guy, I would say, probably thinks they're more classy. Like, a New York guy is kind of like over there. They're a little they're little flip flops and like neck, like flip flops and cocaine over there.
Right.
Where we'll like have a suit and do blow on Wall Street. So it's like we're all pieces of shit, but at least we dress the part. Yeah. like they accept that they're nasty, you know. But it's all good. Man, I got a lot of great comics came from Jersey too.
So. Right. Okay. So you started. So in New York, what are you around comedically that even, like, are you funny with your fam? Do you start doing it as a way to kind of, I don't know, be a distraction to maybe some of the chaos that you start to see between your folks? I guess you're five, so I don't know if, where do you get the bug for any of this, you know?
Yeah, I think what it was, I always talk about this story. My dad, believe it or not, even though my mom and dad went their separate ways, SNL was always on, Johnny Carson was always on, and my dad was like a big fan of Rodney.
Whoa.
But it's weird because my dad was a big fan of Rodney, but he's also a big fan of Dice. Mm. So like my dad liked all this stuff and we were around it. But when Eddie Murphy Raw came out in 87, it was in movie theaters. And my grandmother, I always tell this story, but my grandmother and mother, like, you can't take him to that. I was 10, dude. I was 10 when Raw came out.
Whoa.
And my dad's like, I'm gonna, you know, so he took me and my brother.
Did you want to go?
Yeah.
You see an ad for it and you were like,
I was like, dude, we're going to see. And I remember sitting, we were in Movie Land in Yonkers, and I remember watching the limo pull up and it said Raw, and he gets out in the blue and black thing, and he just came out there and the thing opened, and I'm getting the chills right now, and I was locked, and I'm going. So then I think, you know, since my parents got divorced, my mother moved us a lot. So I always had to get friends and be liked. So I would always start low and people would be like, who's this guy? But then all of a sudden I would get popular and girls and sports and then all of a sudden move. So I think that was part, but I was always able to tell stories.
Yeah.
And be like, yo, watch Paul do that thing that Eddie Murphy did in Beverly Hills Cop. So even as a little kid. So I think I always had it.
Right.
You know, in me, and then I did my first open mic in upstate New York, in Woodstock, New York, actually, at 21 years old, and I didn't have anything written down. I thought I can go and just talk and be funny. So the next week, I was like, well, that wasn't good. I had no joke. So I go, book me next Tuesday. And then I wrote, and I brought my 6 minutes, and some friends came. And that's when the bug, that's when I started calling New York City up in my early 20s to do like bringer shows, new comic night.
Wow.
And then that's how it happened. I dropped out of college right after that.
Wow.
And I was like, and I got a sales job, and I was knocking doors, phone, cable, internet, door to door, making like 50 grand a year at 21 and doing stand up wherever I could. But when I got into it, it was black rooms and contests.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
I came up fucking 8 Mile style.
Oh man.
Only white dude in the room, me or one other white dude.
It's
they're
a
like,
great
"Yo, that white boy's funny. Let's see." And it was just like, and I had to do it. No money. Like 200 audience members that are just like, "Let's go. Let's see if you're funny." And but I loved it, man. And then all of a sudden somebody goes, "Hey man, you're funny. Come do this room." "Oh, come do that room."
Which is how it should happen, by the way.
When I see
young comics like posting, yeah, like, "I'm in your city, let me do your shows." I'm like, man, fucking, like, you got to put in the work of being around and being great. And that stuff does happen when it's supposed to happen. Like, you putting in the time and being like, "I'm going to put my head down, write more, and being active."
Yeah.
To call these places to try to get in. But then it's like, yeah, then once you're on stage, like, when people want, like, that stuff, when they see you crush and then they want to pull you to another show, that it happens the way it's supposed to.
And I think what you said, you hit it on the head, because it's like, as much as this YouTube fame shit helps people fill rooms, it's not like, I want to put the work in.
Yeah.
And it's like, so 15 minutes after your set or whatever, you're like, something's got to, so I love the fact that like your chops and your experience doesn't lie.
Yeah.
When that comes out, it's like, you're right. I see your clips. When you post club, "Oh dude, that crowd, working." Like,
yeah, yeah.
Comics can see other comics that are working.
Totally.
And that are like, "Oh, this guy can go as a national headliner,
right,
A rooms across the country and kill for an hour."
Right.
And then you see people who are like, "Oh, they're trying to get followers." And I'm not knocking that.
Totally.
I'm not, listen, man, this is everybody.
But it's a lot more clear than you think.
It's a lot
as far
more
as like what the intent is and you can just tell. It's like, yeah, there's, and that's why this is such a just profession where there's no replacement for the work. It's like,
that's right.
You know, you can't think that just because, I mean, and there's people that have talked about it. And even I think Angela Johnson, when she first got her Bunkwikwi videos like blew up, and she was getting headline opportunities, and she was like, "I only had like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so I would try to like fill the time with other stuff, and then told them like, "Hey, like, I can't be doing this yet. I need to go fucking get an hour because people are coming out, but I don't have, and I want them to come back and really be, you know, pumped to see what they saw, you know?"
Yeah. I heard that like when Guy Code and Girl Code was out, I heard that those comics that got on that were starting to fill rooms, and then you would hear bookers go like, after 15 minutes,
whoa,
you know, it would be like a difficult thing. But the ones that wanted to do stand-up stayed in the game and got better.
Yeah.
And the other ones who were just like, "I'll take this money," you know what I mean?
Totally.
One thing I learned about this business is I never knock anything, but I thought of something last night, and I'm going to talk about it on your show.
Please.
Because as I'm moving up in the business, and I remember even my mentor, best friend Bill Burr, said, "A guy like you, it's gonna take longer because I'm just like, we're talking about work, travel, put it in, like, and I'm not gonna go out in, and not, again, I'm not knocking it, but I'm not gonna go out on the streets in makeup and do man on the street shit in my underwear,
right,
and make a YouTube channel, have a YouTube channel to get that, and then and one of the best compliments I get is when people are like, "Verzi, I love your approach, man, you're genuine."
Yeah.
And even though if that takes a little longer, cool, but those fans are like, my fans are like, you know, so, and now that it's moving up. But I thought about something about success, and I feel like, you ever notice, and I'm sure this probably happens to you with your stand-up and your acting, I know it happens to me, you ever notice when you move a few steps up, you take a few steps up, but then there's always then you got to take a step back.
It's like
always a few steps forward, but then one back. I feel
like, dude, it's Paula Abdul has never been more right about the entertainment business.
As soon as you said that, I pictured the fucking video. Which you just like did.
Opposites attract with the cartoon cat, man. That was a bigger message there, which was about like comedy and the entertainment business. She was just like, "Look, I know I'm fucking a hologram of a cat, but like there is." Everything is two steps forward and then two steps back. But you're exactly right, dude.
And
you get a little something, it's a push-pull constantly of like getting fired up and trying to ride that wave into the next thing. And maybe it doesn't go the way you planned. So then I think sometimes, too, we actively take that step back because we do have that insecurity.
Yes.
"What did you do lately for me?" And we're as good as our last thing. So it's like if something if you're trying to ride that momentum and you're like, all right, cool, then that's going to happen, and that's going to do that, and then it doesn't, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm fucking all the way back. It's like, no, don't skip over those two things you just stacked to get to that next one.
And I think the step back, embracing that and dealing with that with experience as a veteran, going, okay, no, this is the time where a step back is coming. Now I'm going to deal with this step back appropriately instead of being frantic or worried about it. And I feel like the people that everybody – from Chappelle to Eddie, they've all been like, oh man, I wish this wasn't going on. What am I going to do? And then get through that. So knowing that and see, you know what it's like reading the blitz? Like when you're a new quarterback and you just got out of college and now you're a quarterback and the game's so fast, you can't read the blitz. Now the game's slow, you're pointing.
Yeah.
You know, anytime a quarterback starts pointing at shit, they're good.
They're confident.
They're confident.
They've been there before.
They've been there. They know what that linebacker's about to do and they're ready for it.
Or by the way, but I mean, like, wouldn't it be great if we find out like that was like a move that quarterbacks just to look like they've been there before? The same way like a young comic will maybe lean on the mic stand like prematurely because they heard that's what Burr and Verzi do. Being on the stand just to kind of act like that. Then people see them, they have that picture, and their friends back home are like, dude, you fucking look real comfortable up there. Yeah, man. Well, it's I'm fucking leaning on the mic stand. That's what you do.
That's funny. Yeah.
Just the pointing. I mean, I know that's what I would do. I would just immediately get back there and just be like, and just saying shit and pointing.
That's so funny. Like, dude, were you scared? Because you didn't look at you. You were pointing. No, I was just pointing.
You wouldn't even say anything. You were just pointing. Yeah. You wouldn't even call him plays. I was just terrified, man. I was just trying to fucking be like, fucking, this is, please don't hit me that hard. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, like I was pointing at him, begging, come on, dude, we went to college together, dude. Come on, dude, we won a national championship, 32, what's up?
Oh, yeah. So when you're writing, do you try to, you know, do you sit down and have like a time like each?
No. That's the thing, like, so I'll tell you, my new closer, my new special, because I'm going to be shooting a special in September, my second one. Yeah. First one's called I'll Say This.
Yeah, so good.
And, dude, it broke some records on Comedy Central, and it has over 10 million online combined views, and a lot of it came during pandemic. So people are going, oh, I loved your 2020 special. I'm like, that was 2018, but, you know, talk to Comedy Central about that. That's not, you know.
Find it when you find it, though,
right? Yeah, find it when you find it. We were able to get some clips. They released more clips to me.
Oh, good.
But I'm shooting the next one. But my closer, of the next special was me and my son are in my driveway playing basketball. My son's really good at basketball. Like,
dope. Like, by the way, that's all I want.
Like professionals.
Daughter, son, but I want a kid that's fucking like showing signs. Even if you don't get to the fucking league, I want to like at least have a run where there's like AAU, cool tournaments, like where you're showing just nuggets of.
Dude, my son, like. Professional NBA players and college players. When Chris DiStefano, he saw him. Like, Chris has like a scoring record at St. Joseph's Division III. He scored more points than anybody in Queens.
What?
In Division, and he saw my son and people see my son's jumper's picture perfect. Like the elbow snapping the wrist. He's 12.
Who is he reminiscent of?
He wants, you know, he just sees the stuff he sees on TV.
Yeah.
So they're all doing this thing where they're pointing to their veins, ice in the veins, and I'm just
love
like,
that.
Listen, buddy.
He
just turned 12.
Awesome.
You know, but me and him are in the driveway.
That's when I first started cursing, by the way. So, like, any sort of taunting, like, when you're 12, like, that is the age when you start to kind of dial in athletically on something that you are like, I bring a little something extra to the table. So, like, doing that, like, I'm all for that. It's also funny to see a kid do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he'll, like, you know, and he talks, but it's funny that you said that's when you started cursing because I'm not obviously going to go into the whole bit, but we're playing in the driveway. And he knows that, like, and even though I'm only 5'8", I was always the, you know, the little white kid in the corner who would just develop a shot.
Love
and, you know, so we're in the driveway and I start beating him because he was being rude to his sister. Bad. And he threw the ball, like, hey, he was being, so I was like, come on now, we'll play one-on-one. So I kind of back him to the hole, 1-0, you know, then I hit another one, you know, you get your shot from me, you know.
Yeah.
Dude, he starts, I see him start to, like, blush and really start, his heart started going and he was like, okay. Dude, he steals it from me. Okay, and he starts running towards the hoop, and I'm like, oh shit, and he pops one, and it goes in, and he just looks me in the eyes, and he goes, let's fucking go, right?
Oh, man.
And I remember I walked, I go, what? Like, go sit down and think about that. I remember how proud I was.
You're playing me for custody.
Dude,
you're like, whoa, what?
I walked away like, this fucking kid is the shit, right? But I can't let him know.
No, dude,
so,
you got to contain
that.
So
I'm like, I'm your father, you don't talk to me. So anyway, long story short.
But secretly, I love that
shit. I knew. As I'm walking into the house, I go, oh my God, this could be a joke. I find out, I tell some friends, find out Andy Richter and Conan O'Brien hear about it, hear about the joke, and they're fucking going laughing their balls off.
Awesome.
So someone's like, dude, this is a joke. Then I tell my another buddy of mine, Chris Lambert, he goes, that's funny. So I'm like, oh, let me do it. So I'm at the Cellar.
That's how you, by the way, I feel like gather some of your best
shit. And
right?
that's how I
live in life, yes. Telling the stories because you're a great storyteller. Yeah. Recognizing that people are like, you get the response.
The younger comic in me wouldn't have known that was a brilliant piece for a show. The younger comic in me, that I wouldn't see it. But now I'm going, oh my god, that right there, that life nugget,
yeah,
is going to be. So I do it at the Cellar, and it fucking levels. And now I'm going, oh, now, you know, as a comic, you start adding.
Of course.
So I'm a New York Comedy Club. I do it. Boom. The next comic goes on. Paul, stay here. Yeah, I had a story like that. Like, they started involving their stuff. Like, I'm going, oh, I think I got something, right?
So Tagging your story with their own stories.
Now it's 2 times old. Get ready for this. It's 2 times old. Somebody goes, you're opening for Burr in the Round at the Garden in front of 18,000. You got to do that joke, right? So check this out, dude.
Whoa.
Dude, check this out, dude. So 18,000 in the Round. Everybody I know, comedy club people, like everybody knows that I'm doing it. Joe Bartnick, hilarious. He said hello,
yeah,
by the way.
Love Joe.
Yeah, he said hello. He loves you too. He's opening, and I'm going second. And then, now I had done it with DeRosa 3 years prior where I went first, then DeRosa. There were some sound issues. I still had a great set, but it was like a horseshoe instead of the Round.
The
Garden. Okay. This is so now I'm going second. Like, there was some sound issues for me and Joe. So the first one was good, but we remember going, man, we wish there was a box of 200 people that couldn't hear.
Oh.
So there was like a ruckus. And it was just, and don't get me wrong, the people that heard were like, great set. But just to
come on,
know,
in the comic in you, to just, know that just, not everyone got to
yes. So time, all of yeah. a sudden, Burr is like, dude, I want you and Barnick on the next one. And this is kind of when I started like really not opening for Burr anymore. I was like, this is kind of like, yeah, all right, we'll do like, when we go to a game on the road, we'll all jump on a show.
Fuck
but
yeah.
I'm not opening for you anymore. And he was like, yeah. So anyway.
Which that's a big step. We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. So yeah, and that has to happen. But yeah, we'll get into that. So 18,000, the Garden, the Round, and I said to myself, all right, look, if the set goes well, I'll see if I can do this bit. Okay, we'll see. But who knows, dude? I get on stage. This is on my children, and you know, dude, I had the set of my fucking life at the Garden to the point where when I was talking, it was quiet. When I hit was Chris Rock was there. Chris Rock said, I killed. Dude, it was nuts.
Whoa.
Dude, I fucking, here's the thing. So now I'm on stage, 18,000 people. I got them in the palm of my hand. And I just looked up at the Raptors and I saw the Knicks. I'm a Knicks fan.
Yeah.
I saw Pat and I saw all that shit up there. And I'm going, all right, guys.
So Pat Riley sitting in the bleachers?
No. I saw Patrick Ewing's. I saw Patrick.
I thought you were telling me Pat Riley was going to look down and give you like a thumbs up or something from the fucking nosebleeds.
Patrick Ewing stared at me and just went like this. Patrick Ewing just looked at me and just went like this. He had the sweat dripping from his chin like he was at the line. And that's the moment I knew to do the...
No. He unbuttons his jacket. He's wearing a shirt with your face on it. He just goes...
He goes like this. It's 33, but then it turns. It says Verzi. So fucking... So I look up and I'm having the set of my life. And then I go, all right, look. If I do the story now and it doesn't work, it's still an amazing night.
Totally.
If it works,
you're playing with house money.
If it works, it's literally the night of my life. Dude, I go on stage, I look up, and unbeknownst to me, Quest loves there, Chris Rock. I don't know. Whoa. I'm on stage and around at the Garden. I'm in my blinders. Get the set.
Real quick, do you like to know that if like Burr was like, yo, this guy's here, this girl's here, these people, like, would you go, hey, don't tell me that?
So it depends. Now if he's like, hey, so and so may stop by, or if I ever, or like even if I'm in the city, like I was in the city, and that, who was there, was some movie star, someone was in. I don't know if it was Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, but some people's like, they'll always be like at the Cellar or certain places. They'll be like, oh, so and so's in there. And you're just like, whatever. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
But the Garden, I was just so locked. I knew everybody was there.
Gotcha.
Or anybody could be there. Gotcha. So I was just in the set. So I'm having the set of my life. And I'm just, I remember going, oh my God, dude, this is cloud nine. And I go, let's try this. If it works, it's going to be. And I look up, I go, guys, we get out of here with a story about basketball. Where else to tell it than here? About my son. And dude, I did the story. And and by this time I have punches. I talk about what he did to his sister. I do a whole story. It's a piece.
How far removed from the initial inception of the joke are we now?
This is quick. This is probably like 6 months, but whoa. No, but like six months since it's happened. No, but I've only done it twice on stage.
Oh.
So maybe like since it happened, and then a couple times on stage, and then knowing I had
it's so new.
So
man.
It's so new. It's so new. And I go into the thing, and I did the whole bit. And when I said, and then my son starts running. I'm like, oh, shit, I got to back on defense. And he hits the shot, and he looks me in the face, and he goes, let's fucking go, dude. Madison Square Garden erupted like they hit a three to win in game seven.
Wow.
And I remember looking around, and I remember going, and I was like, Baba. And I remember I go, all right, you guys ready for me to bring out the man you came to see? I said, New York, it's been an honor. They go nuts, and I'm just going, dude, I'm never going to be at the Garden again unless it's me. I'm never, if anybody says, can you open? I will never do Madison Square Garden. I did it twice. The second time I did it was something I'm taking to my grave. If I'm fortunate enough in this business to, I could sell enough tickets to do Madison Square Garden in my hometown, other than that, I'm not doing it. I bring Burr up on stage, and he goes, how about Verzi killing with a new closer at the Garden? And I was just
put it in perspective.
Dude, I just walked away, and I remember sitting there, and Bartnick is in the back, and he's got a fucking shit-eating grin and a whiskey, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just looked at me, and he goes, Verzi, look at me. Verzi, it's never going to get better than this.
You need that guy
and
call out that moment.
And it was a moment that, because listen, man, we have the nights where it's not. And we'll have a night that it's like, shit, this joke, you know, and we're hard on ourselves. Like, you ever have a set where like people are like, you killed, but you know that you didn't get all of it? It's like, it went over the fence, but like the right fielder could have robbed it.
Totally.
Right?
Didn't hit it on the exact sweet spot. It didn't feel like the way it should when it hit the ball.
Like, you know? When you round first, you're like, did it? Or, oh, and then you finish?
Yeah, maybe you stumbled around first base and people didn't see that because they were focused on how far the ball went. But you're like, dude, I fucking fucked up my round. Like,
I didn't have a smooth stride, yeah. Going to second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you know you get all of it, and it goes to the upper deck. So to have that moment, and kind of that was when, like, you know, me, I remember, I've opened for guys. I've opened for Attell. I've opened for Burr. I've opened for, like, Brewer. I've opened for guys, and I just knew, like, when it was time, we were smoking a cigar. I was just like, no, dude, you're getting headline laughs. And the thing is, like, anytime I opened for guys like that, I just was wanting to be my time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some guys can get caught up in the, oh, I like the 25 minutes in packed crowds and all that shit. And it's like, no, man, you got to do an hour on your own shit. You know?
That's fucking incredible.
It was nuts, dude.
That and that's your how many years into stand up now?
So from my first open mic, 20, but my first 3 years in New York, I was barely doing it.
Right.
So it's like I've probably been a pro for like maybe 16, 17.
Yeah.
Because it's just hard to, you know, like, hey man, come do my show like once a month. You're doing 5 minutes,
count.
If that.
Yeah.
And you don't. So like I'm talking about like I've probably been going hard since 2003, 2004.
Right.
You know.
And so do you. When you met Burr, because you guys now have a podcast together,
yeah,
called what again?
Anything
Better? That's right. Where is that? You guys both have. I want to know how much of when you guys became buds did you feel like of your style was already kind of cemented, and then just being out with a guy like that, because you guys definitely have, you know, come from the same kind of like you pack a lot of punch with your takes on things. There's like a likable.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anger, but like a likable frustration to like the way you approach certain topics, which I really dig.
I think that a lot of my East Coast friends and guys that like I would say comedy wise, like a Bobby Kelly, I guess it's like a fast paced fun. Like
yes.
You said, like likable, but like we're just going to tell real stories and like, you
right.
know, and there's no like, well, don't like if I have to curse in this because I normally would, I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Like I don't have rules. Like, oh, you shouldn't curse. You could get more fans if you don't. I'm like, I'm just going to talk about the story.
Yeah.
And in that story, if it happens to be a curse, but then if I can clean it up,
yeah.
I'll clean it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like a realness. I would say like the thing with Bill is when I first started open for him, he would say things like, hey, man, good job this weekend. And I knew what that meant. That meant you got the job done, you got the people to laugh, and you got them ready for me. Then I remember like a couple years later, he goes, oh, that bit you're doing. I'm like, oh, now he's talking about my bits. And then I remember we were sitting down, and he said some things that like I could have retired. He's just like, dude, you're a fucking beast, man. You're going to sell out. You're like, there's jokes. Like it's. I remember one day he said, watching what you're doing is a beautiful thing to watch. And I remember I was just had a sip, and all I was thinking was, all right, I got to tell my wife he said this, this, and that. Because I'm coming up, and I'm going like, this dude who's you know, one of the dudes now is seeing, but like he watched it from like, it was almost like he was like an older brother or a mentor, and he kind of watched me, and And then when he started to watch me headline and start killing, and he knew how much it meant to me, he knows how much comedy. I love doing podcasts, and I love doing podcasts with guys like you and friends, but none of us got in this business to be a radio host.
Right.
Right?
Right.
None of us. I didn't get in the business to be. Listen, we could be funny and shoot the shit and make people that are listening right now enjoy it, but I got in this business because Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
I got in this business because I wanted to stalk a stage, tell stories, do quick jokes, do this, and then just have a whole thing. And so to get that from somebody, and dude, when you... You know, it means something from everybody at every level. Comics that are younger than you, comics that are older than you,
totally.
Open micers, headliners, you know, legends. When you texted me, hey, dude, man, I heard your bit, man, it's so funny. Like, things like that, it's like, oh, man, people that I respect see something and pay attention because that's the purity. That's what we're talking about before. That's where there's no shortcuts.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to hide.
Because we get the immediate validation from being on stage, but it's like, after that, like... And that's why Bill is such a goat, because, you know, to be that generous with his, affection and appreciation of other people, it's easier said than done to get to a certain level and then still kind of throw nuggets of, like, you know, wanting to discuss bits with you or throw you compliments.
Yeah.
And, like, there are people in this business, we know them, and have, seen them kind of climb to certain ranks where they want to keep people at a certain level, and they don't want whoever's with them or opening or alongside in their camp to get to certain levels because, A, of their own insecurities, or B, of like, well, I like the way things are. I don't want, like, and the fact that he kind of champions you and did at that point and was like, dude, fucking, like, you know, encouraging the growth of you becoming a beast and blowing and blowing them out of the water on certain shows and being like, dude, fucking go for it. Like, make me better.
And it's funny that you said that, because at the end of my special, if you watch through the credits, we're all in the back. And he walked out and he goes, see? He goes, I knew he'd kill it. And he goes, I don't bring cupcakes on the road. He always would say that to us. He goes, I don't bring cupcakes on the road.
That's
and like,
funny.
The thing about Bill is Bill will be like, yeah, no, dude, like, you made me work on that show and I want that. Like, guys like that, and I notice when I talk, the greatest headliners want the whole show to be good, and they want the person before them to fucking kill.
Yeah.
And it's the guys that want that easy layup, you know, to
you get complacent, you're just not going to push yourself the way you should. At least, I mean, and from our experience, right? But like,
from our experience,
maybe there is somebody out there that's just truly fucking can. You
but
know.
I knew from you when I met you at Just for Laughs, Adam. I was like, I heard you like talking to people. I was like, you're hungry. Like, you see who's great. You want to be there. You love stand up.
Yeah.
You love being on stage. And I think like it's kind of like in sports too. Like, you can't teach that part of it. I don't think you could teach any of it really in stand-up, but what nobody can really be instilled in is that, like, that want. You know, I remember driving to Harlem from upstate New York to do an all-black room for 6 minutes, no money, and I could be booed off stage easily. I had to do it. I had to do it. It was like...
Could you do get to this point where you get opportunities like that where there's a definite, like... one way that you could say, take it on, it's challenging, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's also... so easy and comforting to be like, dude, let me just go home and not have whatever feelings of, you know, that show and not doing well could bring. Like, to want to avoid that is so. But then those feelings of, like, taking it on and, like, getting a couple laughs or somebody in the crowd, some sassy, you know, smooth, heavyset black lady that's like, baby, I'm gonna put you in my purse and take you home. Like, that fucking compliment, you ride that through the next week.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, dude.
No, yeah.
I remember the first time I opened for Sinbad, and like, there was a tall-ass, smooth fucking guys coming out in suits being like, I see you. That's what's up. And then you had these women that were like, I'm going to take you in my purse and put you on. I just want to chew on you at night before I go to bed, baby.
I suck that funny dick. You're like, what? Like, all right, that went a little. I appreciate you like the comedy, but that's I'm married. Yeah.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Are you a man? What's up, dude? Are you going bald? Sorry. 2 out of 3 men will experience some form of hair loss by the time they're 35. Shit, I'm 39. Well, you know what? If my shit starts to go, that's just my fucking journey. And more than 50 million men in the U.S. suffer from male pattern baldness. I got buddies that have gone bald, family members, good friends, good comic friends that have gone bald. And look, there's only 2 FDA-approved medications out there that can prevent hair loss. And Keeps offers both. What is Keeps? I'll tell you, Mom. Keeps offers a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. Because look, keeping your hair, something we all want. Nobody wants to be seeing their own reflection in a pond off their head. If you sign up for Keeps right now, you're going to get convenient. Keeps offers convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months so that you don't even have to leave your home. The cost is low. How much? Well, treatments start at just $10 per month. And Keeps offers generic versions, okay? The packaging is discreet so that your neighbors aren't like, hey, what's going on? You lose your hair, you're like, fuck you, Rob. And the results are proven, okay? Keeps has more 5-star reviews, which is huge, than any of its competitors. Look, prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see the results, so act fast. And if you want to act fast and start turning your shit around and getting that head full of stuff, and by stuff I mean hair, it's ready to take action and prevent that hair loss. So go to Keeps.com, KEEPS.com/lastnight to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's Keeps.com/lastnight to get your first month free. Keeps.com/lastnight. Time to fill that head up with some hair.
So now I'll pick and choose. Now I don't want to be in a situation where it's like, not a situation that I just want to be like, oh, okay, I've been through some things. Now, and it's like, because we were talking about this, you have to know your self-worth now.
Totally.
We're used to being, we've been stepped on from day one, and then sometimes you have to understand, and I think for me, 100% the pandemic put things into perspective.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with, you know, leaving my children.
Yeah.
Leaving my children.
The risk-reward factor, right?
On a Tuesday night to rush through dinner, run away from my children, to do a $25 spot at some place, and then running and going, all right, like, yeah, I'm going to work on that material, but the pandemic let me know. I was off stage for 5 months, and then I went to Arizona. I was fine, and I was writing. So it was like, all right, I need to, like, take a step back and look at my life and look at my kids and look at their age and know that, like, yes, there are things you need to do and sacrifice on the way up.
Totally.
And by no means do I think I'm even close to where I want to be. A lot of work to do. But I'm going to be with my kids at dinner. And I'll put in, like, if I put in avails, it'll be, like, for weekends. And, you know, I have the compass and all the clubs in New York. So I'll just kind of say, hey, I'm going to come in now. Like, almost on my terms.
Totally.
That's what I want to do. I want to do it on my terms now for the enjoyment of myself and my kids.
And there's value in saying no, right? And picking.
Huge.
Just being more selective. And shit, like, you discover innately, too, just picking, you know, to be social or go to a buddy's. I don't know if you ever on the way up were, I remember I would get a lot of slack from buddies when I wouldn't go to their birthday parties. Just a lot of fun stuff I was skipping out on to go do open mics. And they were just like, you're still doing that? You know, and I was just like, just come to the party after. And I was like, and then if I did come super late and everyone's fucked up, and I was like, yeah, sorry, I got bumped. Like, this guy came in and I still wanted to go up because I'd already been waiting for 2 hours. So, like, I didn't want to leave. And they're like, dude, you missed the best. Like, no one's really here anymore, man.
Dude, it was your mother's last breath. You're like, dude, I know, but the booker's going to be there. Like, that was the thing. A young comic, if you told them booker or industry, that didn't even matter.
Your mother's last breath. Yeah, that's so funny, though.
Dude, but your mother's in room 218. And you're like, dude, just tell her to hold on.
Yeah. Can you tell her? Actually, see if she thinks this is funny real quick. I just thought of this new tag. I'm going to go up and do it. Like, dude, we literally just pulled the plug.
That's right.
Wow, dude. And they're about to pull the plug on my mic, man, if I don't go up there in 2 minutes.
No, like, because it's so everything.
Yeah.
I remember leaving dinners, and I remember going down, and I would go down, and it would be like a scumbag booker. Like, it was not a good room.
What am I doing?
And then you go, well, that comedian that I know is doing it, and you know what? Maybe that's a thing to do.
Yeah, you're hanging your hat on, like, ways to justify that, like, all right, I didn't just, I mean, dude, I remember sacrificing definitely moments in relationships, right, where it was like, I'm choosing to go do this, or I remember I left a girl's, you know, best friend's birthday party to go because I got into a point to where Comedy Juice, when it was out here at the Improv, was just a really popping show.
Yeah.
My buddy was running, and he was like, do you want to come close this, like, show? And I left early, and I tried to explain. I was like, I got to a point to where I used to, you know, host this show, and it was like the you know, to get to a point to where you can have that opportunity to go on at the end and do more time, and it's packed, and I, you know, and my buddy wants me to do that. I was like, I can't not do that. And she was like, well, then I guess you're choosing. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, like, but that's
Yeah.
There were other signs, too. She ended up fucking a cameraman, but it was from Reno. But, you know, we can get into that on another podcast. But there's just, I don't know, there's you do get to a point, and it's cool to get to that point where it sounds like you're at where you can and be comfortable in your choices and be like, I'm going to, like,
I
might get something also out of, like, hanging with this dinner. Something might happen. And, like, you have to have both sets of goggles on of, like, you know, the whole cliche saying of live a life worth writing about. But it's like, I'm sure, especially for someone who is you know, curating material from experiences, you're probably that's always in the forefront of your mind, right? Like,
yeah, I think when I don't, but you know, the funny thing is when I don't think about comedy is when I get the jokes.
Whoa.
You know, like I was thinking about like I think I wrote a joke. I think I wrote a joke because of your text, because you said Wilshire and Fairfax, and I know that's where Biggie got killed, right? And Biggie got killed on the corner of Wilshire and Fairfax, right?
Whoa.
Literally at that light. He was shot at that light.
Whoa.
He was in the far right lane, and he was shot at the light of Wilshire and Fairfax. Six bullets went in. They that's where they cornered him. So it made
me
think
of... Adam text, yo, don't be late. Be right at this corner. Like, fucking... like.
I know the LAPD. No, so so in my mind, I was like, oh, I'll see it. But then it made me think of why people visit Kennedy's, like... like the X where Kennedy got his head blown up. Like,
totally.
Why do we do that? So then I would like, so then I just started thinking about why is that a tourist thing?
Yeah.
And I'm going, there's got to be a joke. And then I'm like, honey, we could go to Epstein Island. And this is the condo.
Whoa,
we could stay. So I'm thinking, so in
funny.
My mind, I'm just, so that's when it happens. So when I'm not, even thinking about comedy and it was, oh, Wilshire Fairfax. Oh, Biggie got killed. Why would I want to see that? Oh, John F. Kennedy's got the X in Dallas.
People
and then
always
all of a sudden,
want me to go see the
people
Kennedy.
People always want to see
Why
tragedy.
Is that?
Dude,
it's almost like the same way guys are like, yo, I just like in college, like I just took the biggest shit. You got to come take a look at this. It's like.
Yeah. I was in Oklahoma City and they're like, yeah, dude, do you want to see the bombing of, you know, the. You know,
Jesus
the,
Christ.
And I was like, I don't know. Like thousands of people died there.
It's great. There's a new Panera right next door. We'll go there after. You're like, dude, don't try to tie this in to your shitty tourist
dude, we'll
abilities.
Smoke a cigar. It's like, that's a celebratory thing. That's
yeah.
not...
That
yeah.
is so fucked.
So
that's really funny.
So that's when jokes come to me like that. So I'm going to like, you know, write that.
That's a superpower too, man. To be able to just be so disconnected, but connected to that part of your brain where you're like, I can just be thinking and like living a life mode, but then still have my brain always on in a fashion to be able
but
to...
When you're not as a good comic, when you're not good enough as a comic and you're younger, I would have never put the...
No.
I would have went to the Biggie thing, took a picture, and then been like, dude,
and
what's
somebody
funny about
commented.
Coffee?
Yeah.
And I would have just done... So, right?
Oh,
you're just going to go and do... And then you're going to think about something that's...
Yeah.
Oh, me and my wife got into a... you know, but instead... So I think it's like... Yeah, I think it's seeing more
funny,
just
dude.
With experience.
So
then it makes you think of, well, what's going to happen later?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Where, when you're writing, when do you know that like a story like is, like after you crush with that story, playing ball with your son at the garden,
yeah.
Were you like, okay, that version of it is done? Or are you still like, all right, I'm still going to keep playing with it. Like at what point do you
It's going to be in the special.
Great.
So what I was going to do is as I was like touring this year, like I got COVID, had COVID early.
Oh, wow.
I got COVID like week one. I got COVID. Dude, I got COVID like before symptoms were out. Like I got COVID like the week before
so
the
you
world
about
stopped.
It, before we all did, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
One of those guys. You're like, yeah, dude, and I invested in this and that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking had
so
the mask.
Once I got better and I was like, where is safe? I have antibodies. Where is safe? So went to Arizona, went to San Antonio, went to these places, and I was like, very rarely I won't do that joke, but I'm always adding.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm always, the act out changed. That's what happened. The act out changed. So now I'm like, I'll act out the game a little bit with my son. Or like, you know, so you know, you check it up with him. Or like I did this thing where I back him to the hole and I act like I'm posting up
nice.
On my son. So
nice.
that made the joke get better.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you got a lease on life coming out of COVID, or was it a pretty...
I was scared just because, like, the week that I had it, hospitals were filling up. New York was horrible. They were saying there were no ventilators. And my
a lot
cough
of uncertainty.
Would happen, my cough would happen at night, late. So it was weird. Like, I'd be okay during the day. I'd, like, clear my throat. And then at night, I was like, that's when I was like, I get into coughing fits. And I'm going like... Man, it feels like it's high, but if this thing like gets low into my lungs, am I going to be? So I just didn't know. And then once I got to like day 7, 8, I was staying in the guest room. All my family ended up getting it.
Wow.
You know, all my family ended up getting it, but I stayed in the guest room, and I lost my smell and taste, and then my wife lost her smell and taste.
What was the first food that made you? Because that definitely happened to me certain times. If I'd be, sucking on a Slurpee or like some, you know, beef jerky, and all of a sudden I'm just like. I'm like, dude, it says black pepper, but I can't taste any black pepper right now.
Yeah, dude, I'll tell you the story.
Yeah.
So the story is, it's not an international symptom yet, right? It's not an international, it's not known yet. And Rudy Gobert, the center
oh, yeah.
for the Utah Jazz, when he did
the
his
newly
microphone
crowned
thing,
third time defensive player of the year.
Yes, he is the Frenchman, right? So I'm laying in the guest room, I'm coughing, and I just was like, oh, there's no. Do I have this shit? So I'm like, let me just see what Rudy Gobert's up to, like see what his symptoms are. And I swear to God, I read at night, Adam. He goes, hey, guys, I want to thank all my fans and people, you know, with the well wishes. But I do have to say, I haven't been able to smell or taste in the past 4 days. Has anybody else experienced this? Now, this is before Great Britain said that 60% of cases of people under 60 had this. This is before South Korea said it, because those are the first ones. So this is just Rudy Gobert, like 40 hours, 36 hours before it was a symptom. Rudy Gobert said that because he was so first. He was like patient zero, right?
Had you gone to Rudy Gobert for any other medical, like, check-ins?
Never. Yeah. The fact that I went to a Utah Jazz center as a diehard Knicks fan, but I knew that he was like patient zero, so I just wanted to. And dude, hand to God, I go down into the laundry room and I take a bottle of fucking Febreze and I spray it in my face and I can't smell it. So I'm going, nah, Paul, this is in your head. And I'm spraying, fuck. And I go up to the kitchen, I open whiskey, and I'm going, dude. And I'm going, I got COVID, dude. So,
oh man.
3 o'clock in the morning, I wake Stacy up. I go up to my wife. I go, baby, you got to come to the hallway. She goes, what? She's already pissed. When my wife is sleeping or hungry, don't fuck with her. And
I can't smell Febreze.
I go, babe, you got to come. She like marches into the hallway of our house. And I go, babe, I think I got COVID. I can't smell or taste shit. And she goes, what? And it's not a symptom. So she's looking at me like, she goes, you fucking woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning to tell me you can't. And I go, the center of the Utah Jazz.
God, that doesn't help your case at all.
The center, the French center of the Utah Jazz can't smell.
And he only knows because Greg Ostertag told him that the bump on his cock was herpes. And you're like, dude, stop getting medical advice from a team you don't care about.
We're moving to Utah for medical. So then all of a sudden, like a day and a half later, his tweet actually made others say, and then doctors started to say. So he actually helped that way.
Whoa.
And then 5 days later, I'm in my kitchen and I see my wife grab a candle and go, and I go, you fucking got it. You got it. And
tell me that doesn't smell like linen and pumpkin.
Yeah. Like pumpkin spice. Yeah. And so then she got it. Then both of my kids, we felt. So my doctor said, he goes, don't come in for a test. You have it. He said in a month or two get blood work and you'll see. So in a month or like 6 weeks later we went and we all got the antibody test, came back antibodies quick, and wow. and they think I might have had COVID twice because my antibodies were strong a year later. So I was told I kind of didn't need the vax, but I took the vax.
Yeah.
I'm like, even though they were like, you probably, you know, you. I was like, listen, man, and I'm hearing now, you can't go to Europe. If you want to go to Europe or you want to travel, you got to have. So I was like, I'm going to do it. So I did the Moderna.
Yeah.
And so. Did you develop,
that's crazy, by the way. Did you feel coming out of it like a little, like, you know, like you had a kind of not a second lease on life, but like just, I don't know, to get through it. Did you feel like, all right, cool, now it's extra balls to the wall?
I would say, yeah. I felt like, oh, my God, like, because it was so new with me.
Yes.
Like, I remember, like, Andrew Schultz was like, you know you don't. Oh, you're coming on the show. No, you don't. Like, they were thinking, like, I guess Michael Yo was the only comedian to have it before me. And he was really bad.
He's hospitalized.
While he was hospitalized was when I started feeling symptoms. So I just told, like, a couple people, and then, like, the Jim and Sam show found out, and they were like, do you want to come on? And then I started getting nervous. I'm like, dude, they're going to, like... Then I got nervous that I don't want them to talk to me like, oh, dude, Verzi might... Like, I didn't want it to turn into, like... Dude, when I tell you, like, it was, like, the first radio about it, and it started to get me, like, a little... Yeah, it just would have been, like... I also didn't want to get attention that way. I didn't want it to be like that. And then I just, like, told the story. I had not gotten tested because the doctor said no, but I told him everything that was going on. Schultz had me on. We talked about it. And then once other people started to get it, they were like, okay, like this is not killing everybody.
Yeah, because there was so much speculation still. And so it's almost like nobody wanted to, you know, like people were making jokes, but also you don't want to be too, you know, I don't know, jokey about it because you're like, this could be a serious.
Yeah, like I didn't want to be like lack. Like I always had like my. It made me think of like not that I was like the first, but like it made me think of when Magic Johnson said something in '91. He goes, when they told me I had HIV, he said my friends and family, everybody looked at me like I was going to be dead soon. Like, imagine that, because he had it when Magic got diagnosed with HIV and he retired from the Lakers and had that press conference. That's when, if you got it, you were. like Eazy-E.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, that's when, like, if you got it, so, like, he said, he goes, I could see people looking at me. And I was just like, imagine that shit.
Fuck that, dude.
Like, people are looking at you like,
Did you get any of that?
This could be the last. Just when, like, people, the only thing that I got was when people wanted me on the radio show. Like, quick, it was a little like producers of shows were going like, hey, dude, heard you're not smelling or tasting. You want to come on? And I'm going,
heard you can't tell the difference between Scotch and Febreze, man. You got a 415 slot available? You're like,
we tried Rudy Gobert. He wasn't. Yeah, dude. I was just kind of like, what are they trying to like? I'm not going to say it was gross in the business, but it was.
I'm sure there were people that maybe weren't fucking with you as much as you wanted, and then they were just like, dude, we got, like, come on, it'd be cool to hear the story and whatever.
Well, luckily, Jim and Sam, I'm a friend of the show, but there were some podcast people that were like, and I'm going like, come on, we're not that cool.
Yeah.
Like, we're cool, but like, we're not like you texting me at 11:30 at night and trying to get me on the show cool.
Yeah.
You know, but once I got to like day 8 or 9, I was like, I'm gonna get through this and then we'll be good to go.
Did you develop any hobbies or, I don't know, the shows? Like, what was the thing that kind of post-
Building a studio like this in my garage. Because once I got through that, I was like, you know what? Because I never...
Did you make a bucket list?
I never took the Verzi effect as seriously. Like, when I go on a show, I was so focused on stand-up. Mm. The special did great. And then I started getting dates in A rooms all over the country.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where... But I was neglecting. So I loved doing the Verzi effect, but it was just audio. And I was kind of neglecting, like, dude, this is your podcast. And the pandemic made me go, all right, now we're going to build a studio. Now we're going to Zoom it. Now we're going to do either split screen with a guest, or I'm going to be there doing my rants like to the thing. And like so things like that, like I always said to people, I go, look, man, the weakest part of my game I always felt was like social media. I'm almost like humbled to like think that somebody wants to see me make eggs. But then I realized, wow. Yo, dude, you gotta be out there. So that's when my producer, Andrew Themlis, like we started loading up on clips. I built the studio, and I was like, okay, if this is part of the, you got to be a 5-tool player, right?
Yeah.
And that was, my wife would always say that. My wife would go, I don't care about your, you got to, and then I got to the point where she was like, there's a lot of clips of you now. Enough of you. I got you in the house and air all over this shit.
Hilarious.
You're the one who said it. Yeah. Are you happy? Are you happy? You're getting it home, and now you're getting it on your fucking Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. You happy? Yeah.
Wait, so, and then Burr comes to you to do the show, or did you guys kind of
naturally? No, Burr came to me. Yeah, man, Burr. So here's what happened. When anytime Burr would come on the Verzi Effect or I go on the Monday Morning Podcast, we always had a piece go viral. The one thing that really made people, they still talk about it to this day, was we were in Canada together and we did a joke. We talked about it. Somebody wrote in and said, if you could be in a time machine and you go somewhere before the 1900s, where would you go? And dude, me and him had, it was literally like
alley-oop.
We were in such a flow. I like throw him an alley-oop, he dunks it, he throws me one, I'll reverse. It was, he said something like, I said like, I'd go to a war where there was like muskets, but I'd get out with Uzis and shit. And you know him, he goes, what? What the fuck? He goes, you know, he's going, and I go, no, dude, I would stop a war. Like I would get out. And these people are packed, and I would take everyone. I would be a god. I would be like Jesus. And then he goes, yeah, look what happened to Jesus. And I go, he didn't have an Uzi. And dude, and so we got into, and it went on.
Whoa.
It went on, dude. And all of a sudden, the clip was like, blah, blah. Then we had another one go on. So there was, after about 3 or 4 times, people together, he said to me, he goes, dude, we're going to do
There's
this
something
one.
There.
He goes, we're going to do this one day. I came to LA right before. Oh, by the way, before I got sick, before that happened, I got like L.A. the fullest you could get it. I come out here late February, right? Everything shut down on the 20th of March.
Yeah.
I come out here. I do the Comedy Store main room, packed, sold out, had a great time. Did the Laugh Factory, had a great time. Got like almost like incredible seats at Lakers and smoked cigars with the owners, smoked cigars with the
man.
Lakers. Okay. And then Burgos, come up to the house and we'll do a podcast. And then... I remember him telling me, he goes, yeah, I'm having people that are really close to me going, when you two are together. And then my manager hit me up and goes, dude, that podcast with Burr. So we always, and then the world shuts down. So during pandemic, we would like talk. And then I got a phone call. I got a text message. And he goes, hey, man, hit me up. I want to talk to you about something and important something. And then he was like, you know what? He's like, let's try to like get this podcast. So then we were just going through the name, and here we are. Yesterday we did our 19th episode. It's been like 4.5 months or whatever, and it's going great. We have so much fun because the thing is, like, we trust each other. Like it's such an easy. Yeah.
And you had this rapport off stage, right? And that got strengthened from all the dates and the hangs, and then.
And then, yeah, I mean, family.
Is it just every time do you feel like, because this is a very cool, and one of the benefits of just being in comedy and having comics as friends, but like having, you know, having the offstage rapport and knowing about each other's backstories and families and having that comfort.
Yeah.
And, but then having that comfort to be able to bust balls. But then the trust and the respect. So it's like you can say just about anything because you know you're not going to push a button or strike a chord. Or if you do, both parties trust that, like, you know, you can navigate around whatever that is, whether it's elaborate on it or be able to read the room and be like, all right, maybe not today on that. Or is there just an ultimate, like, give and take?
Yeah, like, I can tell and he could tell, like, there are certain things that I just won't back off. Like, we have certain fights that I won't back off on, he won't back off on. So we won't bring that in. Like there's a couple of sports arguments that, like, I won't. Like, I think Mayweather is the best. I think Mayweather is the best. He's 50-0. And, like, you know, they kind of will shit on me. And God, you know, one of his things was, get this. We were in a restaurant fighting about this, and they're talking, like, Hagler, Hearns, and all that. And I'm going, I respect that. But this kid's defense, like, look at what people are saying about him. He can't be hit by blah. And he was like, get this kid a malt, you know, like, hilarious. So we would get into that stuff. And, like, I'm not going to back down from that because I really think that. But when he's in a mood, he's not going to back. So we'll feel each other. But we kind of have this understanding on the show where it's like, we trust each other, and for the sake of the show, like, me and him will argue. Me and him will argue on the phone, like, hard, or text. We had a 3-hour text message where you would think, like, this is getting nuts. Like, no, you don't know what the fuck, blah, blah, and then we'll be on the show, and it's like love.
Dude,
and
isn't that great? Like, I used to have that with my best friend in sixth grade. We would literally, like, fight so hard.
Yeah.
Play checkers. I remember one time he was beating me in checkers, and I just went boom, 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 king me. And then I flipped the board and go, see you tomorrow, bitch. Sixth grade. He tackled me down the stairs, and we fought for a good 30 minutes in the little stairway thing right in front of the door, to where he fucking scratched me, bit me. See those claw marks on my hand?
Jesus.
I called him Tony the Tiger. He scratched me with his fucking fingernails. We are, like, bleeding, sweating. And then I just stand up, and I was like, you want to come over and play Madden in, like, an hour? He's like, yeah, after dinner.
Yeah, like,
and then
you guys, like, home. Ate each. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then he came right over. It's like, that's a very insane but special bond have. Thanks.
Yeah, the only thing, you know, the only thing about it is, since Bill is such, and I liked it, and I took on that challenge, but, like, I said this one time before, like, the only thing is, when somebody at that level, you know, is like, because, you know, we're a generation apart, right? He's 10 years older than I am, you know, or whatever. So when somebody at that level, it put a target on me in a good way, but it put a target on me, because people will go, like, who's this dude? Like, somebody hit me up and goes, Bill Burr just called you a beast on his podcast. Now, that means when people come to my show, there's, like, it's, but I like
that,
but I like that, though. Because I'm like, yeah, well, you're going to see, like, but it was like, something where it was like, you know, not shit, but, like, all right, man, I loved it. And that's kind of what it was flattering.
Where?
And I took that, but I had people come up. I remember I was at the stand one night, and one guy goes, man, you were funny as hell, but you had to be. I heard too much good shit from a dude like that. And I was just like, and that made me realize, I'm like, oh, that's not just this incident. That's probably happening without you coming up to me drunk and afterwards and telling me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service, online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time, at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text, with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states. available worldwide. And again, there's four ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more. Unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in. There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable, all right? It's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code AboutLastNight. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. And get 10% off your first month with promo code AboutLastNight. And now, back to the episode. Bill, though, I feel like, you know, it's calculated. He knows that, like, when he's going to start truly probably dropping that stuff more so, knowing that, like, you are backing it up.
Of
right?
course. Like, of course. Like, that's the thing. And that's what's flattering about it, for sure.
Anything better? Where's that title come from?
So we would always say it actually comes from a joke that we were in my garage freezing. It was snowing. And it wasn't a redone garage. Like, it wasn't, the garage was a shitty, there was
right,
a garage.
Right.
Like, there's shit in there, there's like thing. And we're like shivering, smoking a cigar, just hanging. And I go, is there anything better? This is how great, there's nothing. And he goes, well, it could be a little bit. Like, so we would, so then, or like we would
could
be
a little
like,
warmer in here.
We always use it for anything.
Gotcha.
So like if we're smoking a cigar in a sports lounge, in a leather chair, having a whiskey, and we look, is there anything better than this?
Right.
And like, no. So then like now people write in anything better, anything worse.
Whoa,
is there anything worse
great.
Than when? So now we have like,
built
you know,
segment.
So yeah. So like, if you ever came on the show and like whatever you love, like something that you just is like you're in your zen, like that time is yours. Like, is there anything better than that? And then us, and it was kind of like us finally doing it, us together. So it was just, it meant everything.
That's amazing.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. I also do love our fandom of sports and comedy. And that's like the amount of analogies you've just so casually dropped during this pod that are sports related and comedy. Cause the two are so very intertwined.
Yeah. I love your shit. I love the shit you have with Sean Kemp. I love the, by the way, for real quick.
Yeah.
The fact that Seattle doesn't have the Supersonics is sickening.
Dude. I mean, we'll do a part.
It's going to come, but it's
going
to come.
It's going to happen. That getting the hockey team, getting the arena is what's going to make it happen. And then the hockey team sold out in like 20 minutes.
Sean Kemp was one of my favorites, by the way. Just so, even
dude,
though I'm a
diehard
I don't
know how
fan.
Much of that you watch. That guy is so fucking articulate and well-spoken. And like, we got into some it was awesome. I mean, I'm going to smoke weed with him next week when I go back up there at
his
shop.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's the best. I mean, I like guys that stick around and add to the community in which they help build up and are still taking advantage of being well, and that's also why we need a team so that he can fucking have his jersey retired, man. Like, you gotta, these guys really.
Kemp needs to be up in the rafters.
Totally, man. Yeah, I want that moment where he's fucking looking down at me, like, you know, wearing the Ray jersey on the, you know. But he, yeah, dude, there's so many. I was rooting big time for your Knicks, too. I mean,
that hurt, yeah.
That was a, like, I mean, you know, just to get to the playoffs, I'm sure was a win, right?
It was huge. I took my son to the only win.
Whoa.
For his birthday.
Whoa.
And it was my first Knicks playoff game and his, and the place was I've never seen. The three biggest things I've ever been to in my life as far as crowd, I'll never forget. Duke UNC at Duke is Cameron Indoor, dude, 9,000. It was like a glorified high school gym, and it was nuts, standing up, nuts. That, I was at game one of the World Series, Yankees-Mets. I'm a Yankee fan. We won in extras. That made me go nuts. But the game I took my son to 2 weeks ago, game two, the Garden, 16,000 allowed for only the second time. It was because game one they let it in. 16,000 in the Garden after these people have been cooped up in the house. The Knicks are back in the playoffs. Dude, there was a fucking alley-oop from half court that Trey Burks threw to Obi Toppin, and everybody thought it was too high. So it looked like, because he was so far to throw it.
Yeah.
Like, he like was like two steps past half court. You're like, oh, this is going to be. And he just goes like that. And Obi Toppin's a big kid, and he's running. And I'm going, I don't know if that might go through. Dude, he caught it and yoked it. When I got the chills. Right, dude, Mattis's, my son's going, let's fucking go. Yeah, I was like, he's like, can I curse? I was like, yeah. But it was really electric in there. And so like Toulouse and the whole Trey, you know, Young thing or whatever.
Yeah.
But listen, man, they had more snipers than we did. They figured out something during that season that we couldn't. They had too many 3-point shooters.
Yep.
That and listen, sometimes they say you live by that, you die by it. They figured it out. They had a lot. But we'll come back. Listen, we're going to come back. I think they're going to make a couple of adjustments.
You also needed a season like that to be attractive
yes.
to big players. Every team, you have to have that one season where – hopefully you do get at least to the first round and make enough of a splash and impact for people to go, all right, there's something there.
Yeah.
Just to stay in the limelight, at least, you know, into May and June for a little bit.
And what you didn't see was Dolan. You notice that? They told the owner, if you noticed that, it was like he was in like witness protect. They were just like, dude, we have something here. Nobody wants to see you. They don't care about your band.
I love that.
Sloppy dude. Look, like just, you know what I mean? And he was away. And then it's funny. Then he went to Ranger games.
Hilarious.
He was like, all right, I'll go to the other team that's bad, and I'll just show my sloppy face there.
Wow. Yeah, that type of, you mentioning those three big events where the place was nuts. I've got another three. I've got Celine Dion in Vegas when I was on Two Pot Brownies, the opening of a Cracker Barrel in Des Moines.
Dude.
And my white brother-in-law, Dirte's first concert that I went to when he was rapping about fucking my sister. Paul, I want to close the show out. All three had their own levels of
Don't
Uncharted.
Sleep on a Cracker Barrel, dude.
Dude, the grand opening. Stumbled upon it, by the way.
And you know what made me nuts about the Cracker Barrel? I was like, dude, they got toys.
Yeah.
I was looking at those checkers.
They got toys. Like, they have a whole gift shop.
Like you get checkers and like and an airplane.
Yeah.
And then
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Quick Cracker Barrel story. Was there, I think it might have been Utah, was there with Jeff Dye and a few other people.
That's why you're a pro. I just mentioned that. Oh, real quick. Quick Cracker Barrel story. Yeah, you're writing jokes.
No, I mean, but this was great because it's also we had this real sweet server. She's coming over, and we were all just being comics and ball busting with her, and I'm sure like talking about the toys and how cool it is to work there and this and that and the food and you know Jeff's just charming her and so then the boss comes over because she was definitely talking to us probably longer than she should have been, and he comes over and he goes, "What's going on?" He was also jealous of like. I don't know, because he knew we were comics and we were in town for whatever. And so then he kind of was met halfway with like, not pumped that she's not, being more active with her job. And also like the fact that she's chumming it up with comics. I think he kind of, so he comes over, he's like, oh, what's going on? He's like, you guys making some new friends? And we're like, oh yeah, she blah, 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 this and that. He's like, oh, so yeah, you guys comics, and makes a couple comics. And then the story is too long, alarm. He goes, I got a joke for you. He goes, what do you call a waitress standing around not doing her job?
Oh.
And there's a pause, and we all go, and he goes, bullshit, and looks at her and goes, and she just goes, and then Jeff Dye was like, hey, man, you're a fucking asshole. And we were all just like, yeah, that wasn't nice. Like, she's been crushing you. He's like, oh, she's been standing around. Like, we got taters and biscuits for her to be dropping off. And it like got real weird. We all tipped her extra hard. And but it was like... But it was also, in hindsight, very funny.
Part of it is funny. Like, even though it's rude.
The joke is very funny.
The way he said the joke.
Because you knew what was coming. Like, it was like, you saw that, and he looked right at her, and she was just like, okay, anyways, I'll go get your guys' gravy or whatever. You know, like, was that two gravy boats?
I thought you were going to go, yeah, fired. Now get the fuck out of here.
Oh, man. Well, that's, yeah.
No, that's hilarious, though.
All right, so I want to close this out with so Inside the Actor's Studio, one of my favorite shows, RIP James Lipton. You no doubt would have been on it once at one point. So let's go ahead and close it out with the 10-question questionnaire to get to know Paul Verzi.
Sure.
Paul, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word. Oh my God, nice. Dude. I'll get it. My favorite word is peaceful.
Great. What is your least favorite word?
oh my God. My least favorite word is anxiety.
What turns you on, Paul Verzi? What turns you on?
Winning.
What turns you off? By the way, your co-host of Anything Better, Bill Burr, said what turns him on? Free time.
what you asked me? What
turns you off?
What turns me off?
Yes.
Passive aggressive. people. Mm. Condescending, passive-aggressive people turn me off.
Hell yeah.
I mean, yeah.
What is your favorite curse word?
Probably motherfucker.
Yes. Do you like to say it at the end or the beginning of a sentence?
Beginning.
Yeah. Carries a lot of value, a lot of weight. Most effective against children. What sound or noise do you love?
Laughter.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Children crying.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Probably a professional athlete.
What profession would you not like to do?
Probably a lawyer.
Yeah.
Dealing with that and like just letting people like, and then if you don't get what they want and then just fighting with judges and then having to do that, like I don't even want that stress.
Yeah.
You know?
And your opinion like matters but can get, you know.
And like if they're like, yeah, like.
Abused.
If they're. You're going to bed the night before knowing that if the court thing doesn't work out for a family the next day, they could lose their business and you were the one they hired. It's like, you know, when a pilot sucks and he doesn't come out to greet. You ever have those flights? You ever have those flights? Listen to me.
Next time, fucking funny, dude.
Adam.
He bombed, even though he got you there safely. Anytime they land, they should come out and take a bow because it's like, you didn't die, motherfucker. Like, you're welcome.
I had 200 and something souls. They always say, remember somebody goes, souls.
Yeah.
No, I have that many people on here and we're in Hawaii. Okay, we were over the Pacific for 10 fucking hours.
Yeah.
And we're here.
Yeah.
Okay, it was bumpy.
Yeah.
It was bumpy.
You got to watch Simon Birch twice while sipping Mai Tais.
I had a bad flight and I go, hey, that motherfucker ain't coming out. Landing sucked. Like guy bombed. It was like when you bomb at a show or you don't do good at a show, you leave quick. You know when you bomb, just like you don't say the goodbyes to friends are a little quicker.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, yeah, man, take off, see you guys.
Ask the staff to sell your merch.
That's what he's just sitting in the cockpit with his head down going,
Are they gone yet?
Are they gone?
Let me know when I can take off again. No, man, you're here for two nights.
Yeah, dude, you got the Atlanta route Wednesday. Being a lawyer, you're thinking of that, yeah.
If heaven exists, Paul Verzi, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You did everything I expected you to do perfectly.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You motherfucker.
If he just, and then he lights a cigar and gives it to me. And then, yeah.
Takes off his coat. He's wearing a Ewing jersey under that. A Verzi jersey.
And then we're sitting there and he goes, dude, I knew you were going to try that joke at the Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Great answer. Dude.
Yeah.
So glad we made this happen.
Oh, dude, man. You want to know why? I'm going to tell your listener something, dude. This dude is a stand-up guy. No pun intended. The guy, you're a real dude, man.
Thanks, bro.
You know, you're just one of those dudes where it's like, you know, a lot of people could have reached out. And not that, but like... And I watch you do stuff, and I know how funny you are, but, like, you're just a real one, and I know people always say that. Like, you know, I had some L.A. – I'm not going to mention names, but I had some L.A. people go, hey, man, no. I was like, dude, I had a lot of L.A. people tell me they love me, and it's like, dude, we just met. I mean, you don't know me. You know, like,
that is crazy.
Hey, man, love you, dude. And that's different.
Yeah.
Like, that's different. Like, hey, man, I love you. But, like, I'm like, dude, I love you, dude. Like, you're a real one. It's like, we just met.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But, like, you are a real one, dude. And I'm glad that the podcasts I did on this run were with people like that. And here's the other thing. Me and Adam were in contact that I was coming through to do podcasts.
Yeah.
And he goes, man, dude. Love to make it work, but I'm going to be in Jersey.
I was supposed to be in Jersey, and then I was going to go from Jersey to Virginia, where I am this weekend.
Yeah.
And, they canceled the Jersey weekend, and just like anything, like you just, you know, I forgot that I now had that time to do it, and then
you hit me up.
You were here, and I was like, oh shit, now I can. And then I went back.
I saw a text, and you go, Jersey got canceled, man. Yeah. Let's do it. And I'm flying to Austin tomorrow, it worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
it was kismet. I still don't know what that totally is. Kismet the right word? You ever say a word? Coming out of the pandemic, I feel like since I did less talking, I'm also adjusting to like, I'll say a word and I'll be like, is that what I'm supposed to say in that moment? Like, Like, even I just said it now, but it's all commitment with words. Like, you know.
I got an embarrassing one real quick. I know you got to run. Dude, I was in the car with a buddy. We're driving cross country. And he said a word that's not that big of a word.
Yeah.
And I called him out on saying it was a big word. He goes, yeah, and this whole dilapidated area. And I just go, really? I go, I mean, did you have to go big with the fucking dilapidated? Am I right or is that too?
No, that's is a dilapidated- showy. That's
it is.
It's a very.
He was like a lit major. Like he, yeah, I'm going like, I just go to really dude, like dilapidated. Like dilapidated in my neighborhood was shitty. Like that's a shitty neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that dilapidated area, things are fucked.
Dude, even if I worked at a dilapidated factory and my, like, I don't know, the guys, the brother, it was like the Dilapa family. I don't know. Even if there was just no way around using the word, I still wouldn't use it. And first of all, dilapidated. So it means like what? Like
dilapidated means like run down beat up, shitty.
Dude, so many synonyms for dilapidated.
So many.
To where dilapidated, I feel like, was almost like. When someone who was making synonyms for rundown, they were like, dude, we need a couple more.
Oh,
we need a couple smart ones. Like,
thank you. Because I'm in the car and I go, really, dude, did you have to use a big. And it's not a big word. It's not a big dilapidated.
Well, fuck that. Yeah. Extra. If you're going to double down and say dilapidated is like a cat. Dude, everyone says dilapidated.
I was like, I haven't heard it. I haven't heard dilapidated. When's the last time you had a conversation with somebody, you saw something run down, and they go, dude, how dilapidated? You wouldn't do it.
You have to go out of your way. That's extra syllables. It's extra, like, dude, even. And when I. No, there's no, guess what? That is a red flag. That's a deal breaker.
Dilapidated.
I'm surprised you didn't pull over and fucking let him out. Like,
well, we were in New Mexico on the highway and it was just Red Rock Mountains. And then he pointed at something and said that. And then I just go, you know, so.
Dude, that's awesome. I mean, yeah, dude, but it's also like, I don't know. I appreciate, and I have friends like that too, that will go out of their way to use certain vocab. And I'm like, I'll definitely go back and like Google what it is after, and I'm like, all right, maybe I'll add that to the arsenal.
I love the friends in our business who name drop when it's completely unnecessary and obvious.
Dude. Yeah.
But yeah, dude, I was walking down and I think Madonna saw my shoes. Anyway, I you're like, wait, whoa, what?
Yeah, and I was in Central Park and like these pigeons like started like my buddy Denzel. He starts running at these pigeons and these pigeons freak out and they're freaking out. And it was like Denzel was on the phone with, you know Tom Hanks. But so Tom Hanks, like, and he was like, loves my shit, I guess. And like,
I was doing this bit, the one where I think Beyonce was in the room, but probably wasn't her. And I remember the bit hit. Yeah, those people, that was the funniest.
My buddy Mark Sartell has a joke right now where he goes, my friends say I name drop a lot. You know, which friends of mine doesn't say that? Michael Douglas.
That's really funny.
A great bit. So yeah, it doesn't get a huge laugh, but it's a great bit.
That's really
He's got that, and then he's got another opener where he goes, Mark Saratello is my stage name. My real name is Mark Shaquille O'Neal. Again, always splits, doesn't get a big laugh, and I'm like, you got to stop doing that. He's like, it gets laughs. He's like, it's a good opener. I'm like, an opener should get some laughs.
Yeah. He hit me up for that Supernova, but I think he forgot.
You got to do it.
Yeah, but I think he forgot because, like, the.
Oh, he
it was like a.
Yeah, that'll happen. He's, I mean.
So,
know.
Yeah, no, I was like, I flew in Sunday and I was going to do it.
Oh, no.
And then, like, I flew in Sunday and I had a couple hours, and then, like, I was like, I mean, I don't know. He was like, I think he might have thought it was like a stop. I wasn't anywhere on it. I didn't know. Then I saw like all these people on it, and I was like, dude, I don't think I'm on it.
Oh,
so he might have just.
You hit him up at all?
I think I didn't. But I think what it was it was late night New York. I go, I'm coming in. And he was like real quick. Yeah, cool. But come. And then all of a sudden, I saw like all these comics, and I wasn't. So I'm going like.
Yeah, for sure, it's a forget. I mean, he's done that.
It must have been a forget.
Yes,
thing.
1,000%.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I'm glad you told me because I have a vendetta. No, I'm kidding.
Hilarious.
I hold grudges. Yeah.
yeah. No. He'll get you on.
I think next time I'll do it, I'll give him time.
When are you coming back?
Like, I'm going to probably come back to promote my special in late August, early September.
Yeah. Can't wait, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's going to be a banger.
Pete Davidson's first directorial debut, and he asked for it.
No way.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about our fucking love for Pete. I mean, that guy, I mean, I know you've known him from the get-go, Pete and I's first TV appearance was together on Adam Devine's house party.
Okay.
But I used to, when I would come through to New York, when I think I met him when he was, I want to say 18, 19. I mean, he was the one guy that I would smoke pot with every time I came to New York.
Yeah.
And, but what a sweetheart, man. That's fucking killer. He's going to direct it?
The coolest thing is, he saw like 25, 30 minutes of my new hour, and he's like, dude, this is some of the best. He's like, I want to make my directorial, because he wants to start doing like productions and stuff.
Fuck yeah.
And he's like, I want to be a part of this. So he's like, can I direct? I'm like, dude, I love you, and I'd love for you to direct it. So we're going to do it in September, and yeah, man, it's going to be awesome.
I can't wait, dude.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to probably do it at Levity Live. I'm going to do it at Levity Live.
Oh, killer.
So it's like 400-seater, big stage.
Yep. kind really of built big for stage. Specials almost.
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell did her HBO there, and just
is that
going to
be the title of the special?
Just with COVID, yeah. Rosie O'Donnell did her HBO here, and it's my second. That's what we were thinking about that.
Comma, yeah.
But that would be funny.
I mean, dude, that would get people to tune in for sure. You throw a little love to Rosie. Maybe you shoot a sketch with her pre-special.
Oh, that'd be, yeah.
Where she's like, you know, has a little bit of like, you know, she's honored that you, you know, are kind of, you know, throwing love that she shot there. But also she's like, it's fucking like a lot of people are expecting me now to be on the show.
Be funny if I so dressed as Rosie and just continued her special. Yeah. Like I could, dude, how
you,
funny
you
would that be?
Show a clip on the big screen
the same
and then you just
backdrop,
come back out.
And yeah. I just came, like, yeah, it was the same exact backdrop.
Whoa.
And she goes, oh, she's not done, like the voice of God. And I just did a Rosie impression for an hour and that was my special.
Oh my God.
Be hard to do a Rosie impression as like a.
Have you tried to do one?
I don't even know. Like, she's got a very
distinct voice. Yeah,
yeah, distinct voice. Yeah, so we should shoot that in September. So,
oh yeah,
yeah.
At Paul Verzi on Instagram and Twitter. Anything better? Verzi Effect special again out. It's YouTube now. People can go. Find
you can
it.
Check. Yeah. So like almost half my special is on my YouTube channel. So and we kind of redid. There's a new YouTube channel that we started during the pandemic. Like, subscribe. Anything Better has its own YouTube channel. But get me on all that stuff. And this I will. This is not coming out today.
This will come out in 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So what do I have there? We changed Salt Lake City. Anyway, I'll be at the Fairfield Community Theater in Fairfield, Connecticut for the Connecticut Comedy Festival.
I'll be out there
July
too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm doing it two nights after you.
Fuck
wait
yeah.
a minute. I'm doing
on the 22nd,
me,
I think. Maybe
you, me, you, and Brett Ernst are doing back to back to back. So that's yes, right. Dude. So the week, yes, I'm doing July 20th.
If you want your fill of East Coast white dudes and one Seattle dude who sounds like he's from the East Coast.
And all three dudes love comedy and sports,
yeah,
this
dude.
Is your weekend.
And if you want a conspiracy theorist to push his shit on two other guys that are open-minded.
Yeah, and that's dude, what you want to know what else? Dude, Rosie O'Donnell's hosting.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, so you that's can check me
amazing.
Out there. And
okay, cool.
My first theater show.
Oh,
is October it's far, but it's October 22nd. It's on sale now. Wilbur Theater.
Oh yeah,
Boston.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can get those.
Should have opened with that.
Yeah,
that's amazing,
should've
dude.
Opened with that. Yeah.
That's amazing. Paul Verzi, everybody.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.